Welcome back to RSN Central. It is time for the Tuesday Hacks. Well, the Tuesday Hack this morning, 0416905052 to join our conversation. We'll talk some cricket, racing and tennis, and maybe a little AFL as well. Plus, we'll take your text messages, but let's welcome in the man that does it all for the Australian newspaper. In fact, he is a man that his talents have been spread far and wide. You flip the pages in the Herald Sun, there's the byline, Courtney Walsh. He's writing AFL, tennis articles for the Australian newspaper. Is there anything that you can't do these days, Courtney?
Good morning, Gareth. The solitary hack? Plenty.
Mr. Murdoch is making sure he gets every dollar out of you these days.
And it'd be fair to say that there's not that many dollars going into my bank account each weekend. So certainly more flowing out of it when I'm investing on Flemington on a Saturday. But I suppose a bit of a lean period in terms of staff. So you called them to do a little bit more.
Now,
would you do that, Gareth? Would you be prepared to do, say, a double shift if the need arose?
Depends, really. Probably not.
Golden tonsils, would they get a little rough at the end?
I struggle to do 2.5 hours with my voice, so we'll stick to an hour like Felgate. Like, Felgate walks in and does an hour. Anyway, we'll move on because people don't want to hear this rubbish. We need to... I made that comment just before the form express regarding the Australian Open. Now, I've been pretty vocal on this, mainly because that lockdown in Victoria and this country's done so well, especially this state, to bounce back and to keep COVID-19 out. Like, I was even calling for the borders to be shut just a little earlier with New South Wales before it got into this state. Now, because the lockdown is just a terrible thing to be a part of, and it's difficult. And I know we've been lucky in this country when you compare us to what's happening up there in Europe and in America at the moment. But now to have these tennis players arrive here in the next week or so, and then you've seen a competition in Dubai and a player, not pre-tournament, but midway through a set, has been taken off the court because he's tested positive to COVID-19. Like, what if that happens here in Australia or it gets out because of these tennis players? But do you think that will happen, or do you think that the government's learnt their lessons and there's no way known that they'll allow the tennis players to mingle with the local community?
The concern is absolutely understandable. And as we said, no one wants to go into that lockdown. There's psychological, economic reasons to try and avoid that at every cost, as well as the health impact, clear health impacts of the disease and what it can do to you, either fatal or leave you with long-lasting issues in some cases, certainly. So absolutely want to avoid that. The case in Doha, the men's are in Doha, the women are in Dubai qualifying. It's certainly a concern in terms of probably a safety protocol that's gone wrong. But nonetheless, it's worth noting that there is a very, very large difference in what's happening in the Middle East in terms of the protocols, which are run more on what's happened so far in the ATP Tour and the WTA Tour events since the tour resumed last August, compared to what the situation will be regarding the actual Australian Open proper. As a result, the Australian Open basically is the only event that is putting in a quarantine window of 2 weeks for players before the tournament is played. Now, after the Australian Open, so I know people who have been trying to get events up in, say, Hong Kong, etc., and because Hong Kong's insisting on a window, quarantine window, the ATP Tour and the WTA Tour won't do it. So because of the size and the enormity of the Australian Open, it's the only way they were able to get away with actually instituting the quarantine window. Now, it's absolutely needed, the 2 weeks. We understand that.
So will there be players that you think will arrive here in Australia and test positive to COVID-19 in the middle part of their quarantine?
Oh, I think, clearly that's what's happened in this case. So let's go back to this initial case today. We've got Dennis Kudla, a very big serving American who made a fourth round at Wimbledon about 5 years ago, knocked off Bernie Tomic in the last round of qualifying in Melbourne in January last year. He's arrived in Doha for his matches. Now, the players were told when they lobbed that it'd be between 8 to 14 hours. They land for the tournament. They go straight to the hotel. They're tested. They're not supposed to be allowed out of their hotel room until they've received the results of a test. And here's where there's an issue. This has been an issue this time around. Kudla players have been complaining that some of the results have taken far longer, more than a day. Kudla's clearly been tested, but then been able to take to the court without knowing the results of his test. He's up 5-3 in the second of his first round qualifying match when a supervisor lobs beside the court. Now, he's able to close it out and then told your test is positive. So as his rival is rightly Berenkut, a Moroccan, well, basically a guy from Morocco as of the last week. He was the 22nd ranked Frenchman until he changed his nationality. Now the number one ranked player in Morocco. It's quite a claim to fame. But as he said, well, how can this guy have taken to the court without knowing whether or not he's clear? It puts me at risk. He may now have to quarantine for 10 days. Go into a quarantine isolation for 10 days. It puts the ball kids at risk. Not that there are ball kids, sorry. I should say there's no ball kids for the men's event, which is a bizarre sight in its own right. But it also puts the linesman at risk and whoever else is in the car. So clearly there's been a breakdown there in that protocol. He also alleges that some of the staff members at the official hotel have been using a services lift strictly reserved for the players to try and minimise the risk of contamination. Now, whether that's factual or not, we don't know, but that's certainly a claim that he's made. So that raises concerns about protocols. But basically what will happen in Melbourne, the players will arrive. Now, you're right. Every single chance that someone will test positive because some will be coming from hotspots around the world. But they will be in quarantine for 2 weeks. Now, if they test positive, then they're removed from that hotel and put into a quarantine hotel, you know, a quarantine hotspot hotel, where they have to and withdrawn for the tournament. So they take them out of that. Another factor is because they're now playing these events, you know, in Turkey, where Alex Diminor is through to a semi-final, in the US, Delray Beach in Florida, which is really a hotspot, clearly, and in the Middle East, where, you know, you've got the reigning Australian Open champion Sophia Kenin was beaten overnight, and you've also got the two qualifying events, the players will to some extent be removed from the general population for the last week, this breach of protocol perhaps at the hotel aside. So that's a week to 10 days already out of the way. Then they'll arrive in Melbourne, another 2 weeks of hotel quarantine, the 5-hour window where they go to Melbourne Park and train amid very, very strict protocols aside, or Adelaide with the exhibition event, you know, that aside. So effectively you've got almost 3.5 weeks to 4 weeks of the players being removed largely from the general population. So, you know, I think it's that, you know, certainly there's a concern, but I think the concern and the risk is so much smaller, far greatly reduced compared to, say, an Australian coming back into hotel quarantine as per normal. Because the window is larger, B, you can absolutely guarantee that the officials will be all over it given they do not want any risk. And I suppose the other, and I know it's a bit technical, but the other factor to weigh up, the players can't afford to be testing positive. They're out of the tournament.
Yep.
So if you're coming all the way to Australia, serving 2 weeks of quarantine, bang, you test positive on day 10, you are out of the event. There goes $100,000 or $50,000. They get half the prize money for the first round. But that's a lot of money after they've not been playing much tennis for the last year. So it's there are lots of reasons to comply. We've seen instances of irresponsibility, you know, earlier last year with Novak Djokovic and his tour and other players, but I think clearly the world has wisened up that this is a significant issue.
So, Walshy, what happens then? So you've tested positive mid-tournament over there in Doha and you've played against your opponent, which was a young Australian. So your opponent then, does he play for the rest of that tournament or does he have to isolate?
No, so the Moroccan who was beaten by Dennis Kudla, he is now waiting to see whether he'll have to isolate, but it seems likely he's going to have to isolate. Now, Kudla got through, so he actually won the match. Yeah. You know, he closed out that game, then told, so he withdraws. So he's now out of the tournament. So I suppose the only silver lining from an Australian perspective is that it gives a young Gold Coaster, Dane Sweeney, who I think he's on his Australian Open qualifying debut, a 19-year-old. He had a good win first up. He beat a veteran, Marius Kopel, in 3 sets. He was due to play Kudla in the second round. Now, he gets the benefit of going straight through to the final round of qualifying, so only one match away potentially from making the an Australian Open. But he also gets the boost of, say, I think it's about another $10,000 in prize money or $7,000 in prize money. So it's the silver lining. One of the 7 Australians to go through last night does benefit from
that. Have these players been socialising in the locker room? No.
No.
And that'll be, the biggest test as well for the quarantine. Like, they're so familiar with each other. Like, Kyrgios likes to go and have beers with a few of his mates on the circuit, but you're basically with your team and that's all.
So, and that's right. And so we had, you know, there was an issue in at the US Open in New York. And what happened in New York was that they had players in quarantine hotels. But they were, there were some players who were, the French players in particular, and a couple of others, who were gathering to play cards in the hotel foyer or in a room. All of a sudden, one of them tested positive. They're out of the tournament. But it meant that the other eight players, they ended up letting them play, which wouldn't happen in Melbourne.
No.
They wouldn't be allowed to play. But the other eight players were then confined solely, well, those still alive in the event, were confined solely to their hotel room, weren't allowed to go and practice, etc. Could go and play their match, but that was it. It basically, the, you know, they cut it off. So they've learnt from that lesson. Mm. And similar to everything with this virus, you learn lessons, I think, and try and make it better. No guarantees whatsoever. I mean, you know, Craig Tiley, the tournament director in Melbourne, the Australian Open tournament director, the Tennis Australia chief executive, was very confident in December. But how can you possibly guarantee 100%? I don't think you can, but we do know that we're so much better prepared to cope with scenarios than what we were, I think, in the middle of the year.
It'll be interesting and it'd be, I think, fascinating to see what the Australian public, especially Melburnians, response is to hearing what happened in Doha. And they probably don't understand the facts that you've just delivered there, that I think there'll be a few nervous Melburnians, especially with these tennis players coming to Melbourne, especially with their track record, what happened with Djokovic in the middle part of last year. But the Victorian government, this is a massive pump for them to make sure that the Australian Open goes ahead. I'm sure that Daniel Andrews will be making sure that they follow these strict protocols, and it would be a PR disaster for the Victorian government if there is a COVID-19 outbreak because of one of these tennis players.
Oh, you would. I think you would see that heads would roll in many organisations. I don't think it's aligned. And look, the other factor, one other point that's been raised, and it's understandably a point of contention, Australians are still stuck overseas, you know, stranded, not able to get home. There are limits in terms of hotel quarantine spaces, understandably a concern. It should be pointed out that these are charter flights, so they're not actually taking anything away from the allotted space.
No.
You know, for people coming back, like they're not, I mean, you could argue far more deserving, but as it stands under the protocols, this is an additional expense. You know, it's going to cost, I think, Tennis Australia well over $40 million this exercise to make it work. They're eating into significant cash reserves. They are getting some government assistance. I suppose the other factor is, if we want to see crowds back at the football, if we want to see crowds in growing numbers at the races, if we want a Grand Prix to go ahead through the year, at some stage, similar to what happened in Queensland earlier in the year with the AFL seasons, where they started putting in initially 2,500, then 5,000, then 12,000, built to 30,000 for the AFL Grand Final. Cricket here, 30,000. You need to start taking steps somewhere. Whether this is the right one to do it, maybe not, but steps do need to be taken at some stage.
Let's talk some cricket now, and there's been plenty of fallout from that third test, that drawn test between India and Australia. The Aussies had their chance. They had four sessions to bowl India out, and they couldn't do it. And tempers flared a little bit, especially with the Australian captain towards the back end of that day. He spoke to the media today, Tim Payne, and this is what Tim Payne had to say regarding his leadership. He said that, "I want to apologise for the way I went about things yesterday. My leadership wasn't good enough. I let the pressure of the game get to me. I had a poor game as a leader." Of course, he called Ashwin a dickhead in the concluding stages of that on the final day of that match. Some Aussies, and when I talk to some mates around the pub, when you go and have your beer, and some say he's an idiot, Tim Payne, and that he's losing his way a little bit. Some Aussies love what he's about, Tim Payne. Tim Payne has admitted that he stepped over the line. And I think Justin Langer would have been disappointed, especially with the way that he has tried to lead this side out of what happened in South Africa. And he's in that documentary that we've all seen. You can banter, but there is a difference between banter and abuse. And calling someone a D-head is probably nearly abuse in a way. Ashwin came out at him. It was test cricket at its best for mine. Two rival countries wanting one country wanting to survive, one country wanting to win, to go up in the series. And then Steve Smith, what he's done on many occasions, according to his teammates, and Tim Payne defended him in this media conference today, regarding him shadow batting in between overs and at drinks break, and then he marked the crease. And it's probably just a habit that he's been doing all of his life. Now, that's been a complete overreaction to me, because people have done it all through when I've played cricket, and I haven't played first-class cricket, but they tell me when Trent Copeland tweets today, this happens all of the time. Now, it's after drinks. Everyone takes guard again after drinks, don't they? To start a new day, you take guard. So Pant would have had a chance to take guard. Your thoughts on all of this?
I suppose there's that interesting line about test matches can be a true revelation of character.
Yep.
Now, whether that's the case in this instance, I'm not necessarily sure. I think clearly a very front foot move this morning by the Australian camp and Tim Payne to acknowledge that what was said, because it sounded very ugly. What was said would have been said dozens of times, I'm sure, on the weekend in club cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's played football or cricket or sport knows that banter goes on.
A lot of people said no one likes me as well when I was playing sport, which is probably true.
Is that how you found some space on the half-forward flank at Irimple?
I remember when I was playing football one day on a half-back flank, and I was playing against a legend of the St Asia Football League. And I had come, and I played okay at school, spent a little time playing the Golden Valley, spent a season playing the reserves at the Box Hill Hawks. So I went back to my hometown at Mildura, and I probably thought I was better than I was. And I was playing half-forward on the ball in a semi-final. It might have been a home and away game. It was against Imperials. Mildura's arch rivals were Imperials. And a man by the name of Tony Hickey was playing against me. And Tony Hickey would have been late 30s. I was early 20s. And I must have sledged him and said, "You're an old man, give it up." He would have had 45 touches in that first quarter against me and then sledged me and told me to shut up. But it does happen, doesn't it?
It's I suppose one thing that the increasing impact of technology and technological advances in sport, mm-hmm. That we can hear all these exchanges now, whether or not the microphone should be on after a delivery is a factor. It certainly gives you a greater insight into what happens in sport. We see that with video angles. We see that with microphones. What I suppose the public is seeing is how the sausage is made, to use a bad analogy. But, this has happened in cricket all the time. It can sound ugly, and it certainly sounded ugly yesterday. And if you're of the view that the Australian captain should be above this, absolutely understandable that you would be upset and disgusted by it and question whether that should be the case. But it is nonetheless something that has happened. Now, whether it's the right thing or not, I guess it's a matter of your own taste. As I said, plenty of people will have been involved in it. Plenty of people will have sledged. Plenty of people... Now, I think Payne's acknowledge. I think Payne getting on the front foot and acknowledging it today, saying he had a bad test as leader, bad test as captain, and probably failed this test, I think is a good thing. If not for this, there's a couple of things. It's probably overshadowed the incident in the stands in the third and fourth days, which raised significant concerns about what was said to Siraj on the boundary line, and that clearly is a problem, having abuse from the stands.
But no one knows the story there. And that's frustrated me, watching a lot of people that I respect, even on Twitter straight after it, saying, "Oh, we've got no time for racial abuse, blah, blah, blah." There was pictures of those young men that were kicked out of that stadium. Now, they were cleared by the New South Wales police. So, and then Virat Kohli came out. But I think more of the Indians were concerned about the Saturday night comments than the Sunday afternoon comments.
And clearly, mate, not what I'm saying, but abuse, it's what can be tolerated. Correct. Even in terms of sledging is the conversation. Now, really, you pay a ticket to attend. Does that give you the right to abuse someone, be it vilified or psychologically denigrate? But it's also been part of what we've heard in crowds for a long, long time. So it's treading a fine line.
And, it doesn't matter what's like. If you go to country sport, especially footy, there's abuse at opposition players all of the time, but that's been the way that people have grown up. Like, and I think they still have a beer after the match. I think that you need to take the advice from the coach of the Australian cricket side, Justin Langer. I think you can have some fun and banter at the football or the cricket, and you can say, "Oh, you're bowling pies today, Siraj. Any tomato sauce on that?" I think that's okay. Anything else than when you call him names or I think that's, I don't think in 2020 we need that. But you can still give it to him regarding the banter. Maybe have a day off or we're on top. Like, I think that's okay, isn't it?
Well, you're not going to see during a heated AFL match people at Marvel Stadium or at the MCG necessarily reining in saying you're soft. You know, like it's just, that's always been part of it.
And the umpires
You've had people who are far better at putting these things in a witty manner or a really cutting 100%. Matter than others, but nonetheless, it's what's happened.
Hey, Walshy, do you know who I can't cop at the moment? Some of those former English players like Michael Vaughan, who just wants more Indian followers, regarding his comments on Steve Smith saying it's cheating. Like, and Darren Goff, who I love watching playing cricket, Goffy. He had a big heart. He opened the bowling for England. He didn't play in England's greatest ever sides, but on a hot 30-odd degree day at the Adelaide Oval, it didn't really matter if it was the first ball or the last ball towards the end of the day. He would continue to charge in for his country. But now he's making some ridiculous statements in the media. This was Goffey a couple of hours ago on breakfast radio over in England talking about the way that the Aussies are going about it.
Tim Payne then disagrees with the decision. Australia captain, this is, by the way. You're supposed to have made Australia. Butter won't melt in your mouth. Now, he's been fined his match fee because he showed dissent on an unsuccessful DRS review in India's first innings. So that was him after day one, India's first innings. They get then down to the meet and greet of this. Day five, when Australia are under a bit of pressure. India are showing a huge fight back. And this is when it happens with Australia. When they feel they are under pressure, they go for it. They go for it like nothing else, like no other team in the world. And it just went a little bit too far. First of all, you've got Steve Smith, who had showed us all these tears and sorrow just a few years ago when he got done for using sandpaper on the ball. He was the captain, wasn't he, who was responsible for that, because he was the leader of the team. Well, now, during a break in play in between overs, he's going round and dancing around on the, scuffing up the pitch and rubbing out the mark where he'd marked with his spikes, the batsman's marker. So that was totally out of order, right? Nothing, you know what I mean? People say, well, he's done nothing wrong. Well, he has. He's going onto the pitch and trying to make it worse for the spinners to ball onto a length, and then he's rubbing out the markers the batsman had put on to where he puts his bat. So it's plain cheating in my book. And then the second one, just to top it off, because they're under pressure, Tim Payne had already, the captain again, by the way, had already dropped a catch. He decided to get stuck in to Ashwin. Now, what he didn't expect were Ashwin to come back. So the words used were, Tim Payne said about, they're going to the Gabba next in Brisbane, where Australia are very, very strong. Let's just say that. I've had this in the past about, wait till we get you to Perth. I mean, ooh, I'm scared. I'm really scared. But they did the same to him and said, wait till we get you to the Gabba. You know what I mean? It's like they're going to pick a different player. So Ashwin responded and said, wait till we get you back to India, my old friend. He said, that'll be your last test match as well as a captain, because you'll get... And then he didn't like that, so that's when the abuse started. He called him something head. I'll let you use your imagination. And lots of other stuff, saying, nobody likes you in your team. I've got more Indian friends than you've got. And it went on and on and on. So all I'm going to say about this is, but Australia are supposed to got it all in order with this captain, Tim Payne. He's supposed to have sorted everything out, giving him a knighthood, basically. Because what he's done to this Australian team made them grow up. Well, they're just dropping back into that zone. You've got to keep an eye on this. Australia, get your act together and get your act together right now, because it's embarrassing.
Talk about going on and on and on, Gareth. I can be a little long-winded at times, but Darren certainly came off the longest run I think we've ever seen from a fast bowler. As was acknowledged already, Tim Payne on the front foot today.
Yep.
Certainly did the wrong thing. Now, the Steve Smith situation, many, many people coming to his defence today saying anyone who has actually watched Smith closely at any level knows that it's just part of what he does. Now, I suppose a point could be made, should he be doing it? But it's just part of what he's done day in, day out throughout his career, not even thinking subconsciously out there, just doing it as a batsman, as a bloke who spent a hell of a lot more time at the crease than someone like Darren Goff. Certainly some interesting comments for mine. Yep. Now, the other factor, Gareth, Barmy Army. 100%. They're coming to Australia next year. What are they going to be singing in the stands?
Mitchell Johnson. Perfect example. And I tweeted about that the other day. I said, if you're going to, like, as Justin Langer pointed out, no one likes to be abused. Now, I don't think the Barmy Army abuse players. They say stuff to them that could upset them, but it's all in banter. It's like taking the mickey out of your mates at the pub. Like, Walshy, that's a terrible shirt. Geez, you're a hopeless. That serve that you produced in Country Week was embarrassing. Stuff like that.
Said plenty of times.
Yeah, 100. So that's the fine line when if you're giving it to opposition players, like, go home, you haven't turned up. Like, is that abuse? Some players might think it's abuse. Some players might have a laugh with it. So it is a fine line. So what's acceptable and what's not? It's so grey. Definitely if you racially abuse someone, you should never be allowed into a sporting complex or stadium again. And you should be named and shamed. Talking about Goffey, he probably didn't have too much problems against the Aussies because I just had a look at his record. He played 17 matches. And his figures were pretty good. Like, his average was 30.81 for a wicket. And he had 74 wickets against the Aussies. But to say he had success against the Aussies probably is, factually it's not true because he played 17 matches. He won only 3 matches, Goffey. But I can understand when the Aussies are an easy target, especially with the English, but they do have to be extra careful, especially in 2020, and especially after they make a documentary like that. And Langer says, banter, but no abuse. And the different way and the way that they wanted to go about it. So it's understandable. I wonder if Payne, that was him, or he was tapped on the shoulder and said, we need to do something about this.
Look, it's an interesting point. And I suppose the issue for Payne is he's going to be involved in every single ball of the match, given he's the keeper. You know, he's in the play all the time. Clearly the pressure got to them. I mean, and the other factor here is the fabled attack, four sessions, were unable to bowl out an ailing Indian team.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. You're not going to do it every time. You're not going to be able to produce every single time. And certainly there were periods yesterday where they bowled very well, but
have a listen to this, Walshy. Trent Lanskill sent this down, and this was fascinating to watch the fluctuations with the tab with regarding the fifth test. Now, before play on day 5, Australia were $1.17, the draw 6.50, India 23. Now, when India were 2 for 102, Aussies were $1.22, the draw 4.50, India out to $26. Now, when India were 4 for 272, and Pant was flying. In fact, when they were 3 for 250 and Pant was flying, and the target was 407, of course, Australia got out to $1.65. England firmed into a short at $3.10 on that fifth day. And if he stayed a little longer, Pant, there's a good argument to say that they probably go close to winning this test match. And the Aussies were lucky to survive and draw the match themselves. So India got out to it. So the draw firmed in when they were 5 for 299 at 4.30, quarter to 5 at $1.38. So it was an amazing match to watch the fluctuations with the tab. So you could get $26 at one time for India, and they were as short as $3.10. The Aussies got out to, $1.65 at that stage, and then by the end they were out to $34, $12 at 5.30. So, yeah, if you took the pun on India, especially the draw. I think we recommended the draw here on RSN Central around that $7.50 quote, because when you looked at that pitch, it wasn't doing anything really. It was a pitch that surprised even the great like Ricky Ponting, thought it would do a lot more, but it played pretty well throughout that test match.
And even the ball that that got Pujara, the wall, the great wall of India, in the end, was an absolute corker. But he didn't really do anything wrong in that shot. It was just the best ball that Hazlewood could deliver. So, makes for a fascinating time in, fascinating tests at the Gabba. India, we know, are weakened through injury. They've lost personnel. The bowling attack is obviously down to its fourth and fifth strung aside from obviously their front man, who's been superb the entirety of the series. Mm-hmm. But you know, one all, Australia needs to win to win back the Gavaskar Border Trophy.
Just quickly before we end up with the Tuesday Hacks this afternoon, will John Paton play for Hawthorn this year?
That's a difficult question. Yep. I'd be uncertain about that.
Okay, you wrote a story about that today. Any more out of, he's been stood down, of course, further investigation. It continues to get worse for him by the day, doesn't it?
Well, I think just the sheer volume of people coming forward and making allegations. Certainly, Hawthorn, you know, on the Sunday released that statement talking about values and, you know, in breach of values, et cetera, after one allegation. By yesterday, it became clear that they had to act immediately, not at training, stood down last night officially, pending further investigations. It's an interesting time for Paton, who's had a difficult career.
Jacob Townsend gets another chance at the Gold Coast Suns. Richmond Premiership player. He's been everywhere, but he's on the rookie list. And well under Patrick Walker, outside midfielder for North Hobart, gets a chance with the North Melbourne Football Club. So Tassie didn't get any luck in the draft, but well done to the North Hobart Football Club with Patrick Walker there.
That's right, having a couple selected in the rookie draft as well, because it's been a couple of seasons where they haven't had any players taken at the top end. So hopefully we can see some footballers emerging again from the great football heartland.
Love your work, Walshy. It's going to be an interesting time. Are you in quarantine covering the tennis?
I've got a very good mate over there who coaching some of the women, who has to come back and quarantine for 2 weeks before we start up. I don't know what's going to happen through the 3 weeks of the Open. I've always been partial to ducking into a bar after a day's play. So whether I'll be able to do that, Gareth, is possibly problematic.
Good on you, Walshy. Thanks for that.